This is Drew Mackey, and you're listening to Singing Mountain. If you know your Chrono Trigger, you know that the song that intro'd this episode is the namesake of this podcast. But if you played through Chrono Trigger back in the day and you don't remember this track or any track named Singing Mountain, well, I am not a big stupid liar. It was cut from the final version of the game. Apparently, it was to be heard in an area that you explored in the prehistory era of the game, one referred to by in-game text in the Super NES translation as Chanting Mountain. It finally was used in one of the added areas in the 3DS remake of Chrono Trigger, but well before that, I liked this song because it was an extra little thing that I discovered long after I played through the game and thought I knew everything about it. But I didn't. There was this, waiting to be discovered by me. That's actually why I named my podcast this. Not just for the musical reference, but because it was an aspect to a game I knew really well, but would have never actually found out about if someone hadn't pointed it out to me. I wanted this podcast to be about video game music, but also the little discoveries you can make about games you love and have played through again and again and again. Whether those aspects are the music itself or backstory I can give you or whatever. This actually happens to be the 50th episode of Singing Mountain. Sort of. It's number 50 as it appears in the feed, but also the 56th or 57th episode I put out, depending on where you're doing the counting. By the way, little secret, if you go to singingmountainpod.com, you can see why there's an extra bonus episode there that you won't hear in the podcast feed. See if you can find it. Make a game out of it. Also, when I initially started doing this podcast, a lot of the early episodes were very short because I was trying to figure out exactly what this podcast thing would be. So I guess I think it balances out one way or the other. I'm counting this as a minor milestone, and the only way I could really think to do it properly was to do an episode all about unused tracks, songs cut from the final version of video games. This actually turned out to be a little more challenging than I thought, because it turns out a lot of the tracks cut from video games are cut for one reason. They're not very good. Beyond that, a lot of the unused tracks I found were from video games that most people wouldn't really remember. Like, if there was a track cut from a video game starring the Olsen twins, would you care? I would not. So the tracks had to be interesting and also from games that are at least fairly well known. There will be one exception to that rule in this episode, but by and large you're going to be hearing content cut from the most famous video games ever. When I could, I tried to dig up any information about what the song was supposed to be and why it got cut, but sometimes that info just isn't out there. Regardless, I hope I can reveal something new to you about a game you probably thought you knew everything about. And I will get there in just a second, but before I do that, someone nice reviewed my podcast on iTunes, and I'm going to read a portion of that review now. A user named Rio Safari gave me 5 stars, thank you, and he wrote in part, "This is one of my favorite podcasts from the start, and as soon as I see a new episode on the feed, it's only moments away until chiptunes and Drew's melodious, sultry voice begin to fill the air. Keep it up, bud." I don't think of my voice as being sultry, but I will take that compliment. If you like my podcast, please give me 5 stars and drop me a review. If you listen to podcasts, you know the reasons why, and I will read your review or a portion of your review in a future episode. Think of this as an opportunity to make me say whatever you want, or be nice like Rio Safari was. Thank you, Rio Safari. And now, the music. In fact, I'm going to start with one of the most familiar tunes in the history of video games, though I'll wager this is a version you have not heard before. Thank you. Yes, it's the underground theme originally composed for the original Super Mario Brothers. And if we're being honest, one of the most influential pieces of VGM ever as far as telling video game makers and players what a subterranean area should sound like. But it's not the version heard in Super Mario Brothers, and it's not the remix of it you heard in Super Mario Brothers 3. This version actually comes from Super Mario Brothers 2. That is, the American Super Mario Brothers 2, my favorite video game, and one whose music I don't really get a whole lot of opportunity to talk about on Singing Mountain. If you're thinking that you played through this game and you don't remember this song, that's because it was cut. Probably not a surprise at this point. The music actually comes from a prototype version of Super Mario Brothers 2 purchased on eBay and uploaded to the internet for all to enjoy. I was actually pretty sure this was fake, but I looked into it and as near as I can tell, it's real. I'm just surprised that I hadn't stumbled onto this until doing research for this episode. But yeah, at some point, the underground cavern areas of Super Mario Brothers 2 sounded like the underground cavern areas of Super Mario Brothers 1. It sounds kinda hipper than the rest of the music in Mario 2, if I'm being honest. Mario 2 is all organ grinder ragtime music, and I guess that's maybe why this got cut. It just didn't fit. It also sounds a lot like Super Mario Bros. 3, which would make sense because Koji Kondo would have been working on that around the same time that Nintendo was gussying up Doki Doki Panic to become the American sequel to Super Mario Bros. So some of the tracks I'm going to give you a backstory for, and some are just unused without explanation, or at least any explanation that I could find. The latter is the case for the next track, which is composed by Yuzo Koshiro for the Super NES classic ActRaiser. This is a soundtrack a lot of people would point to as being one of the best of the 16-bit era, so it was quite notable to me that there's one track you didn't hear in the game. It's called Space Fight. It sounds like a space fight, and maybe like a space fight at a Electric Light Orchestra concert. And it's really good, but I can't actually figure out where it would have gone in the game, because it really doesn't sound like the rest of the soundtrack, and again, that's probably why it got cut. But hey, you get to hear it now. Ladies and gentlemen, Space Fight. Next up, you're going to hear music from a zone removed from the final version of Sonic the Hedgehog 2, either because it wasn't completed in time or the team just went in a different creative direction. However, if you were reading video game magazines back in the day, you probably would have seen previews that had Sonic and Tails running across backgrounds that featured gems and statues and kind of a ruined ancient civilization vibe. The fact that we saw these glimpses of Hidden Palace Zone at all probably means it was axed later rather than sooner, and according to Yuji Naka, it was originally going to be a place you could access after you collected all the Chaos Emeralds. When you hear this music, you'll notice it doesn't sound particularly like a bonus stage. It's actually somber. Beautiful, but somber. The Hidden Palace Zone in Sonic & Knuckles is thought to be a revamped version of this ditch stage, though the music doesn't seem to be based on what you're about to hear. The original version of the stage was ultimately restored, or at least re-envisioned into playable form, in the 2013 mobile re-release of Sonic 2, but I feel like there's a good chance that you didn't play that version, and you therefore still need to hear this music. So here's Hidden Palace Zone from Sonic the Hedgehog 2 by Masato Nakamura. Okay, now some Castlevania. First up is Cross Your Heart, a really good track that you would have heard back in episode 43, which featured a lot of the music from Haunted Castle, which is the arcade installment of the Castlevania franchise. This track was actually remade for Dracula X, which, if you don't know, is Rondo of Blood remade for the Super NES. Though it's a great remake of that song, it just isn't heard in the game. It's on the soundtrack, however, and you get to hear it now. And here's a little more Castlevania. In 2009, Konami did this Rebirth series for WiiWare that had them re-envisioning some classic games. There was Contra Rebirth and Gradius Rebirth, and then Castlevania The Adventure Rebirth, which was a full-color remake of the first Game Boy Castlevania title. If you listen to episode 45, the Game Boy Halloween episode, you heard a few selections from this game, and it's actually a very well-composed soundtrack, which is why it was cool to hear it realized in a richer format than the Game Boy sound processor would allow. Two of the tracks did not make the cut, however, and you will hear them now. In order, Battle of the Holy, which is good, and then Lost Painting, which I actually love, and I'm surprised it didn't make into the final version of the game. It's that good. Have a listen.
We'll be right back.
Streets of Rage is a series that's as famous for its soundtrack as it is for its face punching, and that's why I wanted to tell you about two tracks recorded for Streets of Rage 2 but not featured in the game's play mode. The first is titled Little Money Avenue, composed not by series mastermind Yuzo Koshiro but by collaborator Motohiro Kawashima. Searching around online, I am seeing it was possibly intended to be the BGM for the jungle base stage, and maybe was snuck into the game's sound test mode as a little Easter egg, a little bonus. I don't know for sure. The second track is called Walking Bottom, and yes, that is a hilarious name, and it's guessed online that it might have been the character select theme, or maybe the BGM for the first stage. Again, I don't know for sure. It's a really cool track, though. It sounds like Streets of Rage. It probably should have found a home somewhere in the game, but it didn't, so you get to enjoy them both now. I guess I'm hitting up all the major franchises, and next is Mega Man, specifically Mega Man 7, which has a mystery track that fans have guessed is either a boss name or possibly a theme that was supposed to be attached to Bass, who, if you don't know, is kind of like Mega Man's Wario, only with fewer farts. I feel like this track actually doesn't have enough bass in it to be a theme for a character named Bass, but I also think it's really good. I don't know why it didn't make the cut. Here it is anyway. Unused theme composed by Toshihiko Horiyama for Mega Man 7. So that Mega Man track was just fine, but I'm going to give you one more that I think is striking and awesome and atmospheric and good to the point that, again, I'm surprised it didn't make the cut. In this case, it comes from Mega Man X5, and I would guess that it's maybe just a little moodier and vibier than they wanted for this game. Mega Man X5 is kind of interesting from a musical standpoint, just because the American version of the game features 8 end-level bosses whose names were changed to reference the band Guns N' Roses, which is kind of controversial if you're a video game translation purist, even though there is a long history of musical references in the greater Mega Man universe. But also, maybe just don't change the names just to change them, maybe? So there's a Rose boss, who in Japan is named Spike Rose Red, whose name was changed to Axel the Red in reference to Axel Rose. Grizzly Slash, the bear boss, who in Japan is named Crescent Grizzly, is a reference to Slash, obviously. And the Whale Maverick boss, Duff McWhalen, was switched from Tidal Macoeen, which is a name I cannot decipher. His name got switched to Duff McWhalen in tribute to Guns N' Roses bassist Duff McKagan. In the game, the Whale Boss's stage theme is a remake of the Bubble Crab stage theme from Mega Man X2, but that was not what the composers originally intended. Released on various soundtracks as Unused Deep Sea, the original track is super good and kind of spooky, but in a good way. Maybe it sounds like a different game altogether, but I actually like it a lot. It's maybe in the top 10 for songs I've ever played on this podcast. Have a listen to the track that would have been Duff McWhalen's stage theme, meaning it would have been Tidal Macoeen's stage theme, from Mega Man X5, composed by Naoto Tanaka, Naoya Kamisaka, and Takuya Miyawaki. Hey, do you like Final Fantasy? Because I'm going to drop a bunch of Final Fantasy on you right now. I should maybe say that I'm a big fan of the series, especially 4 through 9, and each of those games' soundtracks left a big impression on me, which is why it was weird that I never looked into tracks that were maybe cut from them. But they exist. For example, there is Final Fantasy IV Minimum Album, which features only 6 tracks, all of them being arranged versions of Final Fantasy IV tracks. Though, weirdly, 3 of the 6 of them are originals, tracks you wouldn't actually hear in the game. When I say arranged, I'm saying that they're going to sound a lot fancier than the stuff you would have actually heard in Final Fantasy IV proper, but you can also imagine how these would have sounded in-game, in a stripped-down form. First up is The Origin, which is a dramatic, vaguely military-sounding theme that I can only guess would have figured into Cecil's past as a bad guy Dark Knight. And then there is Sea of Silence, which sounds like the BGM for something very sad happening, though it is not the game's regular sad theme. And then third is a track titled Restless Moments, which we don't know anything about, but which a lot of people have guessed was an initial attempt at a BGM for the Tower of Zot, which is a techno-futuristic dungeon that your party has to trek through. But who knows? Good tracks, though, all three of them. So Final Fantasy VI is probably in my top three video games ever. And its soundtrack had a huge effect on me as far as making me think about video game music and it being its own style of music and how it works and how it can be used to tell you more about a character or underscore the plot in ways that like are kind of subtle sometimes. Go actually and listen to episode 14, which is all about Terra's theme and an example of the interesting storytelling aspects that Nobuo Uematsu weaves into his music. So in 1994, there was an album called Final Fantasy VI Special Tracks, which featured some unused tracks that I'm going to play for you back to back to back. So in order, you're going to hear Town Theme 2 and Town Theme 3, both of which seem like they would have been BGMs for towns prior to the Kefkapocalypse in the World of Balance part of the game, because they're fairly cheerful and calm, and that's just not the vibe of the second half of the game. And then there's a track called Approaching Premonition that I know nothing about. You're going to hear a version that is apparently the vocalist version, which makes me think that this isn't actually a Super NES composition. I guess it's probably another arranged piece, whereas the town themes actually sound like they could have been in-game music. This third one managed to sound both hopeful and kind of hopeless at the same time, which is kind of a good metaphor for Final Fantasy VI, and I just can't imagine how some version of it might have been used in the actual game. You tell me, I guess.
Thank you.
easily the most recent game I'm featuring this episode is Undertale, and there is a handful of unused tracks from this game. One in particular that I thought was beautiful and moving, and I'm just curious about why it didn't make the final cut, is a track with a strange name, King Description, which I'd like to think is actually like a proper name, like a king whose name is Description. It is believed to be associated with the character King Asgore, and it has the same melody as Determination, another Undertale track, and there seems to be some debate about which version is better. You get to decide for yourself. Here is King Description, composed by Toby Fox for Undertale. I know I made fun of Wario earlier in this episode as Mario with farts, and I stand by that characterization, but I will say that Wario games often have weird soundtracks that I tend to fall in love with. I really like the sound of the WarioWare games, so I was stoked to find a track that's very much of that vibe, but maybe slightly dancey, and that was omitted from the final version of the first WarioWare game. I found it on the Cutting Room Floor website, which, by the way, is a valuable resource for cut video game content, where it's listed only as Music Track of Unknown Purpose, so that's how I'm introducing it to you. From WarioWare Inc. Mega Micro Games is Music Track of Unknown Purpose, composed by Ryoji Yoshitomi and Kiyoko Miyamoto. We'll be right back. In doing research for this podcast, I've come to spend a lot of time with the soundtracks to the Ease games, which means a lot of early Yuzo Koshiro and a lot of PC-88 compositions. And they often have a beautiful nostalgic vibe, even if you didn't grow up playing these games, which I didn't. There's also a curious preponderance of unused tracks on these OSTs, and I'm not sure why exactly, but sometimes the unused tracks get reappropriated for later games, and other times they're just missing from certain ports of that game. And I'm just not enough of an Ease expert to tell what from what, so I'm just going to give you one unused track that I think sums up these games pretty well, and really gets at that nostalgia for something that you may not have ever actually played in your childhood. It's titled Dreaming. It's from the PC-9801 version of Ease 1, Ancient Ease Vanished, which was composed by Yuzo Koshiro and Miyako Ishikawa. It seems like it did get used in at least one other game, Ease Eternal, but please enjoy it in its original form in all its retro glory. So I said that this episode would be all better-known franchises with one exception. And the one exception is what you're going to hear next. Remember when John Goodman starred in a live-action version of The Flintstones because someone thought the world needed more puns about rocks? Well, because it was 1994 and every movie that could appeal to boys got a video game tie-in, there was a Flintstones video game released for the Super NES. I have not played it. I have never had any specific desire to play as John Goodman in a video game, really. And I wouldn't have even included it in this episode if I hadn't stumbled onto a YouTube compilation of one person's favorite all-time VGM, and it included this one unused track from this one Flintstones game. And it's great. It's by Keith Tinman and Jonathan Dunn, who are maybe good in a David Wise Donkey Kong Country way. And I listened to the rest of the soundtrack, and there's nothing that quite grabs me like this one track you're about to hear, but overall, it's not bad. Much better than you'd expect from a video game adaptation of the live-action Flintstones movie. This soundtrack is maybe something I'll feature in one of my 30-Minute Friday episodes in the future, but for now, please take Unused Track 2 from the Super NES Flintstones, composed by Keith Tinman and Jonathan Dunn. We'll be right back. Episode 11 was called Moonlight Drive and was all about driving at night, or music that kind of made me think of driving at night, even if that's not the context it was used in the original games. Whatever. One of the tracks I used was a cut track from Super Mario Kart, a different anthem for the Vanilla Lake stages that I assume got scrapped because it just didn't fit the icy, snowy setting. But it was interesting. And in getting this episode together, I found what one user claims is the correct version of that track. I guess the more widely circulated version of this beta Vanilla Lake track had some tempo issues, and a YouTube user named MetalWario64 says he's fixed most of those issues with a version you're going to hear in a second. It does sound better, so allow me to introduce you to what might be a more accurate version of what Soya Oka composed way back when, but which no one ever got to hear. That is not all. I'm also going to give you a beta version of the original Rainbow Road BGM, which is interesting to experience because when it first starts playing, you're going to be like, oh, that sounds wrong. And then it keeps going and it's actually kind of good. Maybe not better than the one we really got, but catchy in its own right. Enjoy. And that's it. I would guess that very few of you have been listening since the first episode of the show went up. But if you've been listening for a while, thank you. I'm happy to get up to episode 50, episode numbered 50, official or not. And I look forward to seeing how much further I can press on in 2019. I'm not done for the year. I'm going to do stuff in December. I'm just saying, towards the end of the year, it's nice to hit what kind of seems like a milestone, even though, as I mentioned before, it isn't really completely meaningless. If you have any questions about anything you've heard in this episode, or if you have your own favorite unused track and you want to yell at me for not including it, then the best way to reach me is on Twitter, either at singmopod, singmopod, or at my personal account, Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. Singing Mountain is also on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to listen to any of the older episodes I referenced in this episode, the best way to do that is at singingmountainpod.com. I want to give a special shout out to The Cutting Room Floor, which is at tcrf.net, cuttingroomfloor.net, TCRF. An amazing website if you've never been there. It's just cataloging cut content from video games. And sometimes it's like the most boring stuff in the world. And sometimes it's like real game changers in there that make you think of what version of this game was released in some alternate universe. It's really cool. They were a very valuable resource in helping me find games that had unused music that at least we know about so far. Please subscribe to Singing Mountain, any of the places you'd normally find a podcast. Please give me a rate and review. As I mentioned at the top of the show, it's super helpful. And I read them on air. I read all of them personally, but one by one, I'll get through all of them and read them in future episodes. Singing Mountain is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based woman-owned podcast network. And if you want to read about some of the other shows on our network, please go to tablecakes.com. To support Singing Mountain and the other Table Cakes podcasts, please go to patreon.com/tablecakes, where you can donate as little as $1. Or more. We accept more, too. Whatever you feel like. I have one final track for you, and it just started raining and I'm almost done, so I'm just going to push through this. But if you get like a different room tone now, it's because it's raining very loudly. And as I said, we're in Los Angeles, so that's kind of a rare occasion. I'm glad I got to document this in podcast form. I have one final track for you, and it's an extra weird one in that you would have only heard it in the German translation of Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. And even then, you'd have to know how to find it. I don't think it has an official name. I'm calling it File Select Moisamix, M-O-Y-S-E, and it's an Easter egg inserted into the game by Claude M. Moisa, a guy who wrote the German translation of the game. This guy seems to be a bit of a character, and he snuck some weird translations into the game where Link talks to the Cucman enemies, those being the cucumber-looking, bug-eyed, wobbly dudes that you get when you sprinkle the magic dust on a buzz blob, which are those gelatinous guys that shock you if you hit them with a sword. And that sentence did not make any sense to you if you've not played the Zelda games, but just go with me on this one. Link can talk to the transformed version of these characters. In the German one, they say some weird things, including one bit that apparently translates as never without a condom, which is not bad advice, really. But anyway, if you start a new file in this version of Link's Awakening and enter your name as Moisa, M-O-Y-S-E, you hear a Eurotechno rave tune. That is what I'm calling it, Eurotechno rave tune. So I'm going to end a weird episode about deep dives into obscure video games with that. And it is technically cut content because it was cut from later versions of the game. So that's it. Just listen to it. Hey, maybe have a weird dance party. See ya.